Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf, Bava Metzia Daf Vav. We are holding right on top, on Amar Aleph, Ve'elohod Amar Rav Nachman. Okay, let's do a brief summation of where we're holding. So the Mishnah speaks about two people clutching a talus, each one claiming it as his. I found it. No, I found it. It's mine. No, it's mine. Mishnah says, Yachleku, we split it down the middle, not before they make a shvua to validate their claims. Now, why is a shvua necessary? I mean, if you're holding something, we presume it's yours. Rav Yechon says, actually, it's a takanas chachamim to dissuade snatchers so that people are scared off from, you know, snatching other people's garments. Therefore, we impose a shvua on you to dissuade you from doing that. The question on that was, well, Memanav Shach, either way, if we don't trust you, if we're concerned that you're just, taking the other fellow's items, so you're chashed amamayna, you're suspected of stealing, how can we trust you with a shvua? Right? So, well, the Gemara says, well, you know, money is different than a shvua. A person sometimes succumbs to monetary temptations, but he'll resist when it comes to making a shvuas sheker, which has a lot of severity to it. Here comes a kash. Ve'lohod amar Rav Nachman. What about Rav Nachman's halach? Rav Nachman says, Mashbin ois shvuas heses. So basically, we're going through a string of halachis now, which seem to tell us this point, that you cannot draw a parallel between being unscrupulous monetarily to being dishonest when it comes to a shvua. So we had several examples, and here comes another example, which is going to, we're going to try to establish this point once again, that just because a person might be dishonest when it comes to money, it's not going to extend into making a shvuas sheker. Right? It's not going to spill into shvuas sheker. Right? Here's another example. Rav Nachman says, Mashbin oisei shvuas heses. Right? We had this the other day. If a person totally denies, he's a kefer akel. Where's my money? Nothing doing, right? So, midrabbanan, we activate something called shvuas heses, like meses umidiach. We try to push you to admit. So you have to swear to validate your claim. What do you mean? If you think he's lying, if you think he's stealing money, how can you trust him with a shvua? Neimo, we should say, migud chashad amamay nechashad shvuasa. Right? If he's chashad amamay, he's chashad on shvua. V'su another raya. Hadatanu yabchir. This is in the case where the employer had instructed, you know, the bank or whatever to store it, to provide for his workers as part of their salary. He claims he gave it, they claim they never got it. What do we do now? The Tanur Reb Chiya, Shneim Nishboin, V'noitlin, Baal Bayis, both the worker and the merchant can come back to the employer, to the Baal Bayis, demand payment for their services, they make a shvua and they take. Well, you know, one of them is lying, right? Either him or him. V'neimo, so there as well, we should apply this idea of Migu Duchash Amamay, Duchash Shvuasa. If you suspect them of stealing, how can you trust them with a shvua? V'su another right, Ha'adam Rav Sheshus. We're speaking about a shemer chino, a person who did a favor, he washed something, it got stolen, or so he claims. Rav Sheshus says, well, Shalosh Shvuos Mashbin Oisoi. We get him to swear three times. Number one, Shvu Shalei Pashati Bo. I swear that I was not negligent, which caused this item to be stolen. Number two, shvur shalish shalachta b'yad. You should know I haven't used it. I haven't diverted it to personal use prior to this theft. Because if that were the case, Rashi explains, he turns into a goslin. And a goslin is fully responsible, even for accidents, even for thefts. No, I didn't use it. It was sitting there in the corner. Number three, shvur she'ini b'rishus. You should know that I don't have it. I really don't have it. The question is, well, evidently, you're suspecting that perhaps he does have it. means he's stealing. Neymar, so how could you trust him with a shvua? We should say migu the chashad amamayna, since he's suspected of stealing. Chashash v'asa, he's suspected of swearing falsely. Ella, this proves our point. You can't compare the two. Lo yamrinan, we don't say migu the chashad amamayna chashash v'asa. End of discussion. Abaya Omar. Abaya says, look, let's go back to the original question. Shnai meusam betalus. Each one gets 50%. Provided they swear. Why swear? You have it in your hands. Keep it. So Rabbi Yechna told us, because Chayshish, maybe he took it from the other, that sort of triggered the whole conversation here, the whole discussion. Whether or not we say a person suspected of monetary dishonesty will be also suspected of sure dishonesty. Okay? So the conclusion was, no, just because he'll be dishonest with Mamayim, but the fact that he'll have to make a shvua, that will scare him off. Abaya Omar, no. If a chesed that he's going to grab the other person's item, he's going to make a false shvua as well. So apparently, we're not going down that route. So why then does he make a shvua? We're not chesed that he grabbed it, no. Otherwise, you wouldn't gain anything with a shvua. Abaya Omar Chayshin, and rather the concern is, Shama Milva Yishana Yeshlei Olav. The reason why, Shnai Meichsim Metalas, both have to swear. Not because he grabbed it. Concern is that perhaps there's an old debt owed to him. And Reuven saw this as an opportunity, a golden opportunity. And he seized the opportunity by seizing the garment from Shimon, his Baal Chayv. And Rashi says, actually, when he'll go make a shvua, it's really, you know, he's not being dishonest. It's really owed to me. Rashi says, you know why? Afil glima da'al katfei shabed le. When one borrows, he commits to his lender anything that he owns, even a shirt on his back. So here's your shirt. It's mine. So he's not stealing. He's right. Yochi, if that's the case, if we're interpreting his actions in this manner, then why a shvua altogether? Nishka b'lo yishvua, let him take it without a shvua. It is. Ela rather chayshinan shema safik milvi yishana yishla olof. We're concerned that perhaps he recalls some sort of, you know, safik milvi yishana, maybe some old accounts that they may have not yet settled. He's not sure, but he has to, you know, confirm that. So he took the opportunity to grab the talus in the meantime, hoping that that will serve to repay that potential debt that he's being owed. And therefore, we say, hold it. You may be right. He may owe you the money, but let's make a shvua. And now he'll say, oh, okay, one second. Shvua, you know, actually, I'm not sure. And I'll let go. Why? Why would the shvua dissuade him? V'lai v'amrina, haven't we just said, tafis mamani masfeka? He grabs the garment, even though he's not 100% sure it's owed to him. Mishtaba nami misafik. Likewise, he'll make a shvua, even though he's not 100% certain. If he'll do this, he'll do that too. What are you accomplishing by imposing a shvua? Amar av sheshes beder avidi. No, people don't work like that. Why? Parshi inshi misafik shvua. A person is more, has a tendency to quickly back off from making a suffix shvua, v'lei parshi misafik mamayna, rather than backing off from the mamayn, which may or may not be owed to him. You know why? Because doing a shvua under these circumstances is more weighty. It's more consequential. My time, moment, isa b'chazar. What's the worst thing that can happen? I'll get back the garment. So let me snatch it temporarily until we verify. But shvua, once you push him to make a shvua, he's going to be more careful. Less b'chazar, he cannot do it. Words spoken cannot be retracted. So bottom line, shnai meichsim batalus. Each one gets 50% with a shvua. Why? Rabbi Yechon Abaya. Rabbi Yechon says to dissuade robbers. Abaya says, because maybe there's some sort of old account that he's trying to settle, the shvua will clarify things. Boy Rabzeir. Tokva echad b'faneinu mau. So shnayim eksam batalis, and one of them snatched it, totally snatched it, in front of us, from his friend, who was holding it until then. Mau, what's the halacha? Echidami, what exactly happened? How did the other fellow respond? Either shasik, if he was quiet. He remained silent in face of the snatch. Well, obviously he's conceding. Oiduye, oidile, he's conceding to ruin's ownership. Why should we get involved now? Well, if he's yelling and screaming, what do you expect from him to do? What more can he do? Of course, he still has a claim to the item. It doesn't change anything. Tricha must be speaking to Shosik Mikara. Initially, when Reuven snatched it, Shimon's initial response was silence. And a while later, he regained his composure and he started protesting. My, how do we treat this? Two ways to look at it. Mida ashtik, his initial silence. Was that a sort of a subconscious admission to Reuven's ownership? Right? His initial reaction sometimes, a person's initial gut reaction can really reveal a lot. It's a genuine expression of reality. So it's a true concession. Or no. Don't perceive it as such. No, not at all. Kivan de katzava chashta. Because since he's yelling and screaming now, 10 minutes later, Igloy Milsa, that clarifies for us the high deshasa mikara. The only reason why I was quiet initially, sabra, because he was thinking, haka chazali rabbon, rabbon standing and watching, they're going to defend me. But now that he sees he has to fend for himself, he's yelling and screaming. Don't take it as a concession. Omar Nachum Toshma, we're going to try to prove what to do in this case. Again, they both came in holding the item. Reuven snatched it. Shimon was initially silent, and then he started protesting. Toshma, here comes the right. Bameh dvar mamur, when do we say, idinav yachleiku, sheshneim adukin bo, and they're both clutching it. But if a talis is in possession of only one of these parties, the fellow who's trying to get it out, he has to prove his case, and Rashi adds the word be'edim. He has to have edim. End of Bryce. Now, what exactly happened? Are we speaking literally that Reuven is walking to Bezdin holding an item, which is totally in his possession? And therefore we say, it's his, unless proven otherwise, or pshita, obviously. There's no need to discuss that. Must be that there's some sort of catch here. That what occurred was exactly as we described. They both came in holding it. But then, while standing there, one of them grabbed it. And as Rashi adds, and the other fellow was silent, and then he started protesting exactly as per our case. And the Brisa seems to say that in this type of case, Reuven keeps it. It's perceived as a concession to Reuven. Lo, you know, hachav my skin was speaking, and the asul come on k'tfis lo tarbayu. No. It was a more simple case. They both came in holding it. Okay? No, we looked up the halacha. We opened up Shnayim Eichsam Batalis. Mishnah says Echleiku. That's what we told them. V'amina lu, we tell them Zilu, go out. Plugu, go split it. Okay? They left the room. V'hadar osa, they came back. Totally different picture. Ki tafas l'chad minay. Only one of them was holding onto it. Now, what happened outside the courtroom? We're not sure. We have no cameras. What? Hi, Omar. So we have another dispute as to what happened outside. Hi, Omar. Oiduye, oidili. So the fellow is holding it now. Reuven is claiming that Shimon, well, outside, you know, he admitted. He conceded to my ownership. Vahi Omar and Shimon vehemently disagreed. What are you making stories? I never said that to you. I saw you so desperate to have this thing. I said, you know what? Instead of cutting the thing, I'll let you have it, and you'll rent it from me. You'll rent it from me, you know, $2 a month. I rented it to him. I never relinquished my ownership. Actually, I rented it to him. Says the Brisa, guess what? Reuven wins. Suddenly you're renting things to people that steal things from you? A minute ago, you claimed that he was robbing it from you. Now you're suddenly trusting him? That doesn't really hold water. Definitely we tell Shimon, look, Adash, until this moment, Chashad Talei Begazlan. You accused him of being a Gazlan. And suddenly you're turning around, trusting him, Ahashta, now, you're renting him something without Edom. So it's speaking about this type of case, and therefore Reuven keeps it. another option to explain this halacha. Kediktani, it's exactly as per the words of the Braisa, that they come into Bezdin with only Reuven holding the item. The Osel come on, but there is some sort of twist as well. It's not an obvious case, because what happened was like this. The Osel come on, they came in for us, Kitavs Lachad Minayu. Reuven was actually holding it, but Shimon was just like sort of hanging on to the fringes. Mishrach Basruchi. And the point of the matter is that that's not called possession, right? Even Sumchas Ashita, which we had back in the base, who says that money which is sitting in a state of uncertainty, right? We see that there's some sort of uncertainty in terms of who owns. We say Yichalkin, without need to make a Shvuah. But in this case, even Sumchas would agree, holding on to, that's not considered a Muchzak. And we don't see him involved, we only see Reuven holding it, and therefore, we don't even have a Suffolk. Reuven walks away with the entire item. Okay, let's just recap. Reb Zera had a Shaila. Shlomo makes some metalis, and now Reuven grabs it. Shimon is silent and then protests. How do we view it? Concession or not? Now, continues the Gemara. We'll build on that. Imtim Tzilema, if you propose that talk for Echad v'faneinu, in this case where Reuven snatched it in front of us, we force it out, right? We compel him to give it back. We don't consider it to be a determination of ownership. So, there's no question now. If this, in fact, is the halacha, that if, Reuven decides, I'm going to make the whole thing hegdish. Right? Rashi explains, hegdish means before he even snatched it. So, as they're both holding it together, Reuven says, I'm magdish, I'm making the whole thing, committing it to the Beis HaMikdash. Enim kadesh doesn't work. Rashi says, because making it hegdish is no more powerful than snatching it. And if you would snatch it, it wouldn't work. So hegdish, you can't just turn it to hegdish when it's not yours. But on the other hand, if we were to take the other route, that in this type of case where you would snatch it, right, and right, We don't make you give it up, because as we said, your opponent's initial silence is an indication of your ownership. And Tosfos adds, and that's what we're speaking about now, that he was going to be magdish it in this type of fashion. He's going to say hegdish and have the other person be silent and then protest. So it's the same type of configuration, except instead of physically stealing it, he's sort of spiritually stealing it. He's donating it to the Hegdish against the other, his opponent's wishes. On the other hand, if we say that grabbing it in this fashion is a determination of his ownership, we don't make him give it up. So Hegdish of Loitok Fama, what if he Loitok? He did not snatch it physically, but he was Maglish it. What happens then? Does it take effect or not? Kiva da Omar, since we learned, amirosa l'gavoya, when you verbally commit something to the Beis HaMikdash, kim sirosa l'had yidami, it's as though it's equal in value to physically handing it over to to another person. Meaning the motive of transfer between ordinary people is physical transfer, right? Verbally committing something to Beis HaMikdash is tantamount to physical transfer. If that's the case, command the tukva dami. Reuven's declaration of hegdish on this disputed item is viewed as a physical snatch. It should be so, right? And therefore, it has the same effect as physically snatching. In which case, it's deemed his. Oidim or no? Because actually, hashta mia halay takfa. At this very moment, was it snatched yet? No. Was it physically in his possession? No. That's it. So he can't be mangled. He doesn't have the ability to donate it. Why? Uksiv, the pasuk says, v'ish ki yagdish is basically kodesh. The pasuk in describing a fellow being mangled cites a classical case of a person in Magdash's house. And we use that as a precedent, as a model for how Hekdesh works. Ma Beisa Brishusa, just like the home that a person's being Magdash in this pasuk is not only his, but it's in his possession. And that's why the Hekdesh works. Afkal Brishusa, anything you want to be Magdash has to be accessible to you. Lafukiya, as opposed to this disputed item, which is half sitting in the other fellow's hands. That's the question. Again, if we shall say that tukfa, that the actual snatching, makes it yours, does Hegdish work the same way? Could you be Magdish it and let that be considered like a snatch? Toshma. Here comes an attempt at trying to clarify this. Dahima Susa, there was this bathhouse. Davu Minso Labetre, there was an ongoing dispute between two parties in terms of who owns it. Right? Hayomar Didu. Reuben claimed it as his. Vayomar Didu. Shimon claimed it as his. Okay, we're getting nowhere. Kom Chad Minay Agdisha. Reuben gets up and says, you know, I have nothing to lose. It's Hagdish. Right? Parashi Mino, Siddha Chachamim, Rab Chananya, Rab Oishya, Bakul Rabban, all the Rabban stopped using the bathhouse. They weren't sure how to deal with it. Did the Hagdish take effect? Does he have the ability to make a Hekdesh in this type of case? Okay, so they weren't sure. It kept away. When in doubt, stay without. V'amar le'Rav Oishya. So Rav Oishya asked the Rabbah, Ki aslos kamei Rav Chizda l'Kafri. Next time you travel to Kafri, you go to Rav Chizda, boy, and ask him what to do. Ki aslos surah. On the way to Kafri, he passed by surah. And he met Rav Amnuna. Amar le'Rav Amnuna. So he responded, Masnisni, I have a Mishnah, which can shed light on the Shaila, which will prove to us that, yeah, the Hekdesh does take effect in this type of case. Safek Becheres. So we have, let's say, an animal. We're not sure whether it's the firstborn, you know, kosher animal. Echad Becher Adam. Whether we're not sure whether it's a firstborn person. Echad Becher Behemo. Or the firstborn animal. Bein Tohar, Bein Tmein, whether it's a Tohar animal, whether it's a Tamei animal, the firstborn donkey, right, which goes to the Kayin, which, you know, has to be exchanged for a sheep and given to the Kayin. So all these Safek Becheres, all these uncertainties pertaining to firstborns, HaMoitzi Mechaveir Olavaraya, do you have to pay the Kayin? Well, actually, no. If the owner, the Yisrael, the farmer, has the animal, the Kayin has to prove his case, otherwise the Yisrael keeps it. On the other hand, if the coin happened to snatch it, happens to have it, and Rashi says the coin took it, and the Yisrael was silent, and then he protested, mamash our case. So now the coin becomes the new owner, takes possession, and the Yisrael has to go prove his case in order to take it back from the coin. So it mirrors our discussion, our story. It's a case of uncertainty in terms of ownership, and the Mishnah seems to say that if the Kohen would snatch it under these circumstances, it's his. Now, but Tanya Law, we have a Brisa adding another point to the Mishnah. Even before the Kohen took it, Asurim Begizav Avoida, you have to treat the animal like a Bechor with Kedusha. You can't share its wool, you can't work with it. Why? Because in this case, the Ilu or the Yomar talk for Kohen in Mitzina Simiyadai. Why do we say the animal has kedusha? Because if the kohen would snatch it, he would keep it, right? The Tani, as it said, Hamoitzi Mechavel V'Rai. You want to take it back, you have to prove your case. Meaning, the kohen has potential ownership, so because he has that access, the animal somewhat identifies with the kohen, and therefore Bechilo Yitokva, even before the kohen actually snatched it, Asur Megidu Avoida, the animal is considered Hegdish. So you see that Hekdesh can be generated due to the fact that you have potential ownership. The fact that you can physically snatch it, so that's why. Because of that, because it identifies with you, you have that access to it, so the Hekdesh gets triggered because of that. Likewise, in our case, if one of these parties, these warring parties, Shnayim Echsam Batalis, or the two people fighting over the bathhouse, because I have potential to snatch. I can snatch and I keep it. I have the potential to make it Hegdish as well. Amalei Rabba, so Rabba responded to Rav Amnuna. How could you compare the two stories? You see, we're discussing a question of whether a potential owner can assume ownership by way of making it Hegdish. Meaning, is the act of making Hegdish considered like a snatch? Right? That was our question. And you're trying to prove it from where? From a Safek Becher, which is treated like Kedusha because the kohen has potential to take possession. It's a totally different story. Amalei Rabba, Kedusha is Becher Ka'am. Speaking about a natural Kedusha that a Becher has, by default, you know, perhaps this whole notion was mistaken. Nobody ever suggested that if the kohen comes and grabs the Becher, he keeps it. Under all circumstances, he has to give it back. The reason why the animal has kedusha is unrelated to the kohen's ability to snatch. No, avilachin, even still, asurim begizav avoda is treated like kaddish. You know why? It's a natural kedusha. It's not a personal kedusha because it belongs by the kohen. That's why it's kaddish. No, even if the kohen has no access to this animal because it's a suffix, hands off. But you, as the farmer, have to treat it. Have to take into account the possibility that it's kaddish. You have to treat it as such. It's unrelated to the personal, you know, connection to the kohen. The kedusha haba me'aleh oshayni, a kedusha which descends naturally, is totally different. It's not personal. It's not related to the kohen's ability to take possession. So in reality, the kohen cannot snatch it. Still, there'll be kedusha. Amalei Rav Hanani l'Rab, so Rav Hanani came to Rab and he says, actually, I'll prove your point. I'm going to support you. That the kohen actually has no right to repossess this animal, to take possession of the Safek Becher. Tanya de Maseilach, have arrived from a brisa to you, to your point. Okay, here comes another whole different realm. Hasfeikos nichnosen ladilis aser. Now we move over from Becher to Maser Behema. So if the farmer has 10 animals, puts them in the pen, he runs them by one, counts them, 1, 2, 3, the 10th one has Kedusha, it's called Maser Behema. Brought as a carbon, right? Now, even the sveikas, the more that explains like this. Sveikas are animals which were used to swap, to exchange the petar chamor. So you have a firstborn donkey. You have to swap it, you pay it with an animal, and give that to the kohen. Let's say we're not sure whether it's really a firstborn donkey, so you swap it, right? Because even the Yisrael wants to do that in order to, that enables him to use the donkey, right? But he still won't have to give the animal to the kohen now. Because then we apply the concept hamotzi mechaver al varai. So the isser aspect he has to address, but he doesn't have to actually hand the money over to the sheep to the kohen. So let's say a fellow has sveikas, a bunch of these uncertainties. Yeah, sheep that were swapped for suffolk firstborn donkeys. Nichnasen ludirlis aser. You bring them into the pen with all the other animals, and you count them one by one, and the 10th one is Maser Behema. And Rashi explains, as we're going to see later in the Gemara, because really every pidyon petach chamor, even the ones that are given to the kohen, are considered regular, ordinarily owned animals, right? They're regular, you know, regular animals. So he has to do Maser Behema on pidyon petach chamor. So now that it's sitting in the hands of the Yisrael farmer, because he didn't give it to the kohen because he's not sure. So likewise, it's obligated in Maser Behema. So again, asfeikos, all these uncertain animals, nichnasen ladilis aser. Visakadaita. Now comes the kash. If you're going to tell me, if you were to propose that tokfei kohen ein matzinis miyadei, if the kohen would snatch it under these circumstances, right, with the silence and all that, he can keep it. The question now is, how can the Israel farmer include these disputed animals in his count, in his group of animals that are being counted for Maser Behema? It may turn out that the 10th one was actually this animal, so he's going to be making Maser Behema on an animal which is perhaps not even, which is partially the kohen's. because the kohen has sort of access to it. If you grab it, it's his. So that denotes partial ownership. Potential ownership is that partial ownership, right? How could you include this suffix animal in your pen? Right? So if this animal happens to be number 10, so he's basically using something which is partially the kayin's to exempt all those other animals. You can't do that. Oh, apparently, the kohen has no right, has no access. And that proves Rava's point. I'm going to buy you. Well, oh, not so quick. If this was your only proof, this wouldn't be a proof to our master, to our Rebbe Rava. There could be another reason why he's doing it, why he's including it. Was speaking going to Les Leila Tisha, but who? This farmer only has a total of 10 animals, one of which is this one. So, it's a win-win. The manavshach. So either way, he's safe. Even if you would propose that the kohen is sort of a part owner of this animal, and really the Israel perhaps should not be exempting his animals with this one, if it's really the kohen's, right? But there's no risk in this situation. Why? It's a very unique case. He only has 10 in total. Tisha v'hu. The man of Shah, either way, is safe. Ibarach yivahu, because if really this animal belongs to the Yisrael, which gives him a total of 10 animals that are fully owned by him, Shabbat ha-master, then he's good. The master is good. Ilabarach yivahu, but really, if really this animal belongs to the kain, so he doesn't even have 10 animals to work with. He's not chayur, master behem. Right? Tisha, 9 animals are nothing. La bar suri. They're not liable to master behem. So, theoretically, says Abai, theoretically, even if the kohen does have access to this animal, so basically there's an element of kohen involvement, kohen ownership, but still you're safe to include it. Hadar Abai, Abai came back and says, no, actually I'm wrong. This halacha that allows the Yisrael to include the suffix into his account actually does prove Rabba's point that the kohen is totally shut out. Why? This fake la barisuriu. He. Because if in fact this animal is called, you know, sort of a suffix, it's not considered the farmers. It's considered, you know, maybe the kohen's, right? So its legal status is in limbo. If it were true, and we don't consider it at this point totally belonging to the Yisrael, then you could not even include it in the count. You don't say, well, let me take my chances. I only have 10, so either way I'm good. No, you can't do that. Because if it's in a state of uncertainty, you cannot count it as part of the 10. Right? And I'll prove my point. It's not. Kavatz echad min amanuyin nesechem. Halacha is, once you count it, 1, 2, 3, and you know they went through the door and they're on the other side, and it jumps back in, that animal really messes everything up. So kafatz echad min amruim seichon, the animals that already counted jumps back into the uncounted ones, klum turn, they're all potter. And Rashi says, because once you counted, you can't be counted again, you can't be included again. The pasuk says, asher ya'avar, v'lo yishavar, kfar avar. If you already passed through, you know, you can't redo that, right? So once he jumps in, everything becomes potter. Why? Hold it. Why is it messing everything up? In total, you only have one animal sitting in there, one animal amongst the 100 that have been exempted. So just run them through again. If even a suffix can be included in the count, let him go through the count again. Either way, he's good. The more explains. Di bar chiyuvahu. Shape ma'aser. Every 10, right? Every group of 10. Let's look at them independently. Is that jumper in here? Right? If he's not here, all these will never pass through the door, never counted. Shape ma'aser, so that's good. Ma'aser is good. V'la bar chiyuvahu. If the 10 that I'm looking at now has amongst them this kafatz, this animal that had been passed through and jumped back, so niftar b'minyan haroi. Right? So if we say that this group has a problem, number 10 isn't really number 10 of chiyuv, because amongst them you have one of them that had already been passed through, but either way you're good. You're still exempt. You're still safe. Niftar b'minyan haroi. You're potter because halacha is Dama Rav minyan haroi poter. There's another point. Totally new halacha. Let's say you have a pen full of animals, right? Full of sheep, and you're counting 1, 2, 3. You get to number 5, and back in the corral, one dies. That's it. You don't have 10. You can't complete your number. The ones that were counted are already potter, because when you had counted them off, at that point it was a minyan haroi. It had potential. It was a count that had potential to be completed properly. Rashi brings the pasuk, right? Asher yaver v'lo shekvar ova. It was already passed through properly. So either way, you're good. Because as you were counting them, right, you had enough animals in the pen to complete the number 10. Enough animals that had not yet been passed through. And the Mepharshim say was speaking, and he has many animals in there. So the animals that were now counted, 1, 2, 3, 4. So even if, let's say, number 6 happened to be that animal that jumped back in, it doesn't matter. Because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, these animals have been counted properly. It's minyan haroi. Right? And perhaps the ones after him as well, 7, 8, 9, 10, because there were still more animals inside that could have completed the number 10. So even though you have no idea what's going on, but at the end of the day, these were counted properly. So why can't you just do that? Why do we say that if an animal jumps back into the group, everything is gone? Elamai is lachomemer. So apparently you have to draw some sort of conclusion. The reason why you're not chayav to be ma'aser mimanam shach, using this sort of, you know, thinking process, because asiri vatai amar rachmona. The pasuk says number 10 should be ma'aser. Number 10 means number 10 without any ambiguity. Right? So whenever there's some sort of suffix, you don't get involved. There's no master when there's a suffix, plain and simple. You don't say, take my chances. You don't do that. 10 is 10. If you're not sure it's going to be the 10th one of Chiyuv, you don't do it. Hachanami. So back to our story with Rabba and Abaye, with the whole thing with the suffix Bukhar over there, right? Says Abaye, if in fact the Kohen would have ownership on the suffix Bukhar, you would consider it as a suffix. You would not consider it fully owned by the Israel at this point. You could not include it. You could not use it as Maser Behema for the rest of the Israel owned animals. Why? Because if the Kohen has an aspect, an element of Schus, of ownership, then it's not... Israel has no right to use it for his master behemoth for the rest of his animals. So even though I want to take my chances, right? Remember we said we only have 10 with that one. So either way, I'm good. If it's mine, then I'm good. If it's not mine, then I'm not chayev. I only have 9, right? You don't do that. You do not go through the process of master behemoth when you're not sure. HaChanami Asir Rivadei Amrachmona Vlesir Yosafek. Torah says, You could only make a Maser Behemah on number 10, which is certainly number 10. With any suffix, you can't. Oh, says Abaye, apparently we have full support for our Rebbe, for Rabbah, that no, the Kohen does not have any rights, any schus, any element of potential ownership. If he grabs it, give it back to the owner. The Kohen should grab it, give it back to the farmer. So we look at it like he's certainly the owner. Now he has a right to use it for his Maser Behemah. Now, just one more thing. I mentioned this before. Spoke about the Sveikis, right? What are we talking about? How do you get a Suffolk? My Sveikis. Ilay ma Suffolk b'chayres. We say that the Suffolk animal is brought into the pen and included in the Maser Behemah process. We're talking that a farmer has a sheep where he's not sure whether it's a firstborn or not. So why do we say that you can use it as part of the Maser Behemah process? Yilam Suffolk b'chayres, yiya kodesh. Om rachmona. This is the pasuk by Maser Behemah. Number 10 will be kodesh. It wasn't, and now it is, right? You're endowing it with Kedusha. Yeah, Kedusha, Om Rachmana, Vleshek for a Kedush. Not if it was already Kedush. And if this Suffolk Bechor is really Kedush, you can't use it for Maser Behemah. Elo Suffolk Pidyon Peter Chamor. Oh, like we said before, we're not speaking about a kosher animal. We're speaking about an animal used to swap a firstborn donkey. Rav Nachman tells us that those are not Kedush. If you have 10 of them, you have to do Maser Behemah on them. Right? Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman, Rav Avoh, Yisrael she'esh le'asoro safek pitrei chamor b'sech beisoy. So, actually, he's citing a pretty complicated case. The basic halacha is that even if a kayin got these animals from the farmer as a swap for the petrei chamor, he has 10 of them, he needs to do Maser Behemah. Now we have an interesting case, which is just like an offshoot of that. Yisrael she'esh le'asoro safek. Let's say a Yisrael happens to have 10 Suffolk Pitrei Chamor, right? Because he didn't give it to the Kohen if it's a Suffolk. So he happens to have 10 of them. Ma'afar Shalein Asara Sayin. Right? So he has 10 for donkeys, which perhaps were firstborn. He's not sure. He lost track. So on the one hand, he can't just use it. It's Asr. Mafra Shalein, Asura Sein, Uma Asrin, Ein Shaloi. So firstly, Mafra Shalein, Asura Sein. He designates 10, sheep, one per donkey. He swaps. So he fulfilled that obligation. He removed the Isr, he can use the donkeys. Typically, you give the sheep or the goat to the Kohen. But in this case, no, because he's not sure it's a Suffolk. So he holds on to it. But if he has 10, it's liable to the halachas of Maser Behemah. We treat it like any other animal. Right? It's not Kedusha, right? Umaser Mein Shaloi. So he does the Maser Behemah and he keeps them. So that was the case that we spoke about, which is clarifying. So he has this this animal and he does the Maser Behemah. We explained how it works. Okay. So in summation, we had discussed Migud Chashad Amamayin Chashad Shvu'asa, which really spreaded forth as a result of our exploring the reason for the Shvu'ah in the Mishnah. Shnam Yechsam Batalas, why do we make a Shvu'ah? Rabbi Yechanan said, concerned about theft, snatchers. Well, then if you Chashad Amamayin, how can you make a Shvu'ah? People will shy away from a Shvu'ah, and therefore it's effective. Abaye didn't take that route. Rather, the concern is perhaps there's some sort of old accounts that he's trying to settle, but a Shvu'ah will scare him off. Rav Zera took us into a totally new realm. Shnayim Yechsam Batalas, but now one of them turned around and snatched it. His opponent was silent and then protested. How do we treat it? Concession or not? That took us into the next part of the discussion. If you would say that snatching works, what if he didn't physically snatch it? Rather, spiritually snatch it by making a Hekdesh. So we tried to provide clarity by bringing the story with the masusa. And that took us onto the discussion about the Kayin, Takfa Kayin. We'll continue with Hashem tomorrow. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.